ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The Adelaide Fringe is the second biggest fringe festival in the world. It's second only to Edinburgh, and it brings the city of churches to life every year. But what's it like living in a city which seems to have everything happening all at once? And for those who've never been, what's Adelaide Fringe actually like? Now, Sosafina Fuamoli is an award-winning Samoan-Australian writer, broadcaster, music journalist, and she's a host on Radio Australia, and she is an Adelaide native. So, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. No problem at all. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm alive and I'm here.
Two basic criteria. Yep.
Okay. Yes. I'm ticking off, you know, all the basic, the foundational things get here. But no, I'm good, Paul. I'm good.
Thanks. And you're here in the studio with me, but you're from Adelaide, right?
I am. Yes. Born and bred.
And what's it like growing up in Adelaide?
Well, at the time, it was great. I grew up there in the 90s into the early 2000s before I moved away for a bunch of years and then came back where I kind of started developing my career there. So a lot of formative years in Adelaide. Mm. But, you know, I've still got a lot of time and a lot of my heart is there because it's – for a capital city, it's still got that real small town energy, which I think when I lived there and I was growing up, that really used to get under my skin a little bit. If anyone who lives in a small town, you will know that. But now that I've lived away for quite some time, every time I go back, there is something nice and familiar about it.
Has it always been, because obviously a lot of stuff happens in Adelaide, not just the Fringe Festival. Mm-hmm. And if you've been to Adelaide during the festival, I mean, it's explosive. It's so big. Was it like that when you were growing up?
It's hard because I feel like during the Fringe and everything that happens around it, it does feel very city-based. Mm. So if you're growing up out in the suburbs, or if you're not necessarily based in the city a lot of the time, it can sort of feels like it's happening in a completely different space. But in saying that, there was always such an air of excitement and almost mystery growing up when things like the Fringe was on, things like when Adelaide was happening, because you just didn't know most of the people who were coming. Mm. So it did feel like Adelaide was this hot pot of different identities and different voices, and it was something that you could, you know, go pay $20 for a comedy show and either hate it or come out, you know, with your favourite comedian who would then maybe go on to blow up over the next year.
Yeah. You know? Do you think it's a stretch to say that Adelaide Fringe affected your career trajectory at all?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I cut my teeth at the Adelaide Fringe in terms of writing, in terms of reviewing things. I've performed in some Adelaide Fringes a long, long, long time before I ever started writing or doing anything professional in the arts. But it's the pace of it really forces you to get your perspective right. You need to manage your time. You need to manage your health, both physical and mental, because you could hit like week three of the Adelaide Fringe and feel like you're a dead person walking if you decide to go a bit too hard too early. But in terms of what I do now, it definitely affected things because I got to meet a lot of local artists. I got to write about so many different sorts of shows, whether it be comedy, cabaret, performance, music, when they started to incorporate more music shows into the Fringe program. Mm. And it really helped me develop a voice and develop a love for just heading to different things, because it can be boring just writing about the same thing time after time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I'm just thinking about Adelaide Fringe, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, uh-huh, but eons ago, I was in a sketch comedy group called the Lords of Luxury, and I believe we met when you were – who were you writing for at that point?
I can't even remember.
Young journalist, though, at that point.
Oh, you're so kind to say that. Yes, no, I can't even remember what year that would have been. Over 10 years, maybe?
Yeah. A while back, though.
A while back. But, yeah, that was when we would have first met.
Yeah.
How did – Was that your first sort of run at doing fringe circuits?
Well, somewhat perversely, it was my first time in Adelaide.
Really?
Yeah, so okay. I got a very odd view of the city. My first view of Adelaide was Adelaide Fringe, Adelaide.
That's it,
but
yeah.
That's not Adelaide, is it?
No, it's really isn't.
So what's the difference for the two versions of Adelaide?
Well, I always thought it was really stupid the way that the Adelaide calendar has been set up. I get why it is like that because you've got a lot of people coming in from out of town, interstate, overseas. It makes sense to cram everything in the space of about 2 months.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything for local tourism at all because it means that local businesses are now having to go up against all of these, you know, your Adelaide festivals, your Adelaide Fringe festivals, which is completely different to the Adelaide Festival of the Arts. Then you've got your Clipsil 500s. You've got all the music festivals that happen around the same time. And bearing in mind when I was first starting out, you had everything I just mentioned, plus the Big Day Out, plus Soundwave, plus Future Music Festival, plus Laneway Festival. Mm. So back then it was cheaper to go to things, but people still couldn't afford to see absolutely everything. So you have this intense bubble of activity in the city for a month or so, and then as soon as it finishes and everyone leaves, it's like Adelaide goes to sleep. Because it probably needs to for a few months, but in terms of getting the momentum back for the rest of the year, it's really hard.
It seems like it'd be uniquely equipped then to do something interesting, because obviously COVID, you know, and the lockdowns had a real effect on the arts industry.
It did.
And I was going to ask if it's bounced back, but given the fact that it does seem to have a unique hibernation-style life cycle, do you think Adelaide Fringe was uniquely equipped to wake up and thaw out maybe a bit faster than others?
That's a really good question. Perhaps in some ways, but then in saying that, South Australia's relationship to the pandemic was also incredibly different to, say, what people in Victoria went through or, you know, indeed people in any other state that had a more militant approach to to lockdowns and stuff. So I could be completely wrong. I don't want to speak on behalf of the Adelaide Fringe or anyone who was living there at that time. But from my perspective as an outsider and as somebody who works in the arts looking in, they kind of had the luxury of not really having their momentum rocked that much.
Okay.
So I feel like in some ways, yes, because without the amount of touring artists coming through, they obviously couldn't run the Fringe in the same way that they did pre or even now post-pandemic. But I don't think that they ever truly had that sense of we could actually lose everything here.
Right.
In the same way that, say, the Melbourne artistic scene went through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's back now.
It's definitely
back, and it's a very dense event, surrounded by other dense events.
Yes,
and I'm sure for the outsider who just toddles off to Adelaide and wants to see some live stuff, I'm not even sure where the outsider would begin. I mean, when you look at the program for a major festival, be it Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Perth Fringe, Adelaide Fringe, whatever, how do you, as a devotee of live entertainment, actually begin figuring out what to attend?
It's hard, isn't it? I've been living in Melbourne now for almost 7 years, and the Melbourne International Comedy Festival still terrifies me. And that's coming from my normal being the Adelaide Fringe Festival, which is kind of like the Melbourne Fringe and Comedy Festival, like, smashed together.
Yeah.
It's very dense. It's a lot. But I feel like it's become easier for me to sort of take a look at a program and think, okay, if I am on a budget, which I am still, you know, what are the top 4 or 5 things that I'd, you know, want to spend my money on? And it's interesting now, because I look at a lot of I say this with, like, inverted commas, you know, your top line comedy, say, I am less likely to shell out a $50, $60 ticket to see, I don't want to say any of their names because I've got a lot of time for them, but, you know, the sort of household name comedians that you would see on all the other circuits, because even though I love them, that could be money I could be putting into a developing performer.
You could see three small up-and-coming shows for the price of one large one.
Exactly. And to me, that's kind of what, I mean, that is what Fringe meant.
Mm.
Like back when I first started going, the first year I performed at the Adelaide Fringe was in 2007. And that was very much still when you would just be walking along, you know, the pathways in the Garden of Unearthly Delights, and you'd just be seeing the weirdest stuff, but it felt normal. And you'd be okay with people coming up to spruik their show that would be going for $5 because it's just like, okay, why not? I'm here.
Yeah.
Whereas now in more recent years, it's become heavily commercialized. It's become about, you know, who, like what touring company can be battling it out with each other to sell tickets to their shows at, you know, like I said, a $60 or $70 price point. And it feels like it's kind of taken that spirit out of it.
Right.
So when it comes to looking at dense programs and breaking it down, it's like I kind of just avoid all of the major headline stuff and see, like, go from, like, the midway point down and just see what's interesting, you know?
It seems like some of it is geographical in that, for those of you who haven't been to an arts festival before, you've got the prime venues in the heart of town, and then as you get further out, you have more, for lack of a better term, fringy artists.
Yeah.
Would you recommend people grab a program and then go to the city centre and walk away from it as far as possible to see the really weird...
Definitely.
Yeah?
Especially in Adelaide. I was only there over the week, a couple of weekends ago, and driving through the city, I said to my partner, there are so many new hubs of activity for the Fringe. Like traditionally it was always held in the two parks down the end of East Terrace. You had the Garden of Unearthly Delights on one side of the road, and on the other side you've got Gluttony. Those two are still there. They've extended all of that right down to whatever that main road is down the other end. I can't remember it right now. But if you're driving through like Victoria Square, which is quite a walk away, it's almost like they've did a massive copy and paste of what's on East Terrace and they put it in the middle of the CBD itself.
Uh-huh.
So you've gone from having two major hubs to four.
Oh.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend, sure, go and base yourself in the garden for a little bit. Go immerse yourself in that. That's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
But go and see what lies beyond the Rhino Room. What lies beyond all of those little, I guess, haunts. Because people are just doing pop-up shows everywhere because they can now.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's way more entertaining.
Do you think there's something in Fringe festivals for people who aren't huge fans of... Look, my parents and grandparents, God bless them, they just like stuff that's a little bit safer. And that's not an insult. I think it's great. They just want comfort food in terms of entertainment. Do you think a Fringe festival, which because of its name sounds like it's going to be just a cluster bomb of weird artsy stuff, do you think just a ordinary person who just wants to have a fun, safe night out can get something out of these festivals?
Definitely. I think they still have those what do they call the, it's not like Cheap Tuesdays, but they've got like the days of the week where you've got like discounted tickets for shows that might be doing their soft openings or something. And those are generally really good because you can just, especially if you're in Adelaide, you go to the garden, they've got like a massive chalkboard up the front that says what's showing each night and at what time.
Mm-hmm.
Just go take a punt. You could get like, again, a $10 ticket to go see a show at 6 p.m. It could be comedy. It could be music. It could be both. There's no, you know, required knowledge to go in and enjoy these shows. But I feel like if you go in with the mindset of being like, look, I don't really know what's on this lineup, so I've got no expectations, then it's like, well, you can't really be disappointed.
Yeah.
You might be like, okay, probably wouldn't go and see that again, but I'm glad I did because it's put money into a performer's pockets to help them develop the next show or to, you know, at least it's showing an investment in that artist that, you know what, this is what they want to be doing.
Yeah, it's a really nice way of giving back to the community, the arts community, and doing it directly. I mean, let's be honest. So when you're sitting in a small 12-seat venue and someone's just done a burlesque number and the lights were up the whole time and it was a bit weird, they see you.
Yes, they do.
And if it's a good show and they can literally see a person sitting there reacting positively, it can change the trajectory of their entire career.
Mm.
And also the fact that you paid to be there, I mean, it's such a great way to directly affect the Australian arts scene, I think.
Have you had the opposite experiences, both as a performer and as a fan?
I once did a stand-up show for a 75-seater room. Four people turned up, and it was a hen's night.
Oh, no.
And they did not care for my style of jaunty humour, let me tell you. How about you? What's your worst gig?
Well...
you don't have to tell us.
No, I did, because it wasn't bad. I actually thought it was quite funny. Mm. But, I'm the sort of person who... I'm more than happy to roll with things at stand-up shows, at comedy shows, whatever they may be. Mm. If a performer will look at me, they're generally going to look at me if I'm sitting in a front row. They'll read my energy and they'll most likely be like, you know what, we're going to focus on her because we know that she can probably take, she can take it.
Yeah, okay.
Which can be a positive and a negative. So I remember many, many, many years ago, again, I kind of got shifted into the front row of a Sam Simmons show.
Ah.
God, I'm getting traumatized remembering this anyway. So I was sitting front row. I can't even remember what the bit was, but it was in one of those Spiegel tent-y things. And it was a show where there were multiple people who were trying to have banter with him. And if you know what Sam Simmons' humor is like, it can be very... kind of, I don't even know how you describe it. It's
acerbic.
It's very acerbic. Yeah. And so there were some people in the audience who were clearly trying to have their moment with him. They were trying to throw it back at him, but they're not funny.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, all right, I really don't want to be part of this, but I'm finding him funny. And because it was so poorly lit, there were just these moths everywhere. It was an outdoor venue. There's moths everywhere. So he's... decided to hone in on me because I'm the only one who's not reacting. I'm not reacting to the moths. I'm not trying to insult him.
Mm-hmm.
And so for about a good 10-minute length, he would not stop. Everything was just aimed at me. And I was just like, you know what? It's getting to a point now where I might break and this is not going to end well.
Right.
And, so I kind of became the butt of the entire show.
Wow, like a running theme.
Kinda. Yeah. And I was just like, all right, let's go for it. And it got to the point where the show finishes. As you'll know, Paul, sometimes the artists will sign, they'll take photos with people, and I'd come out with the people who I was with. And I was fine with it. I'm like, yeah, it is what it is. And he'd seen me and he'd called me over and I was just like, I can't do much for this man. This is not what I'm here for.
Sure.
And he came over and he gave me a really big hug and he in my ear, he was just like, thank you so much for sitting through that. He's just like, I could sort of see that I was losing people because people were trying to throw jabs at him. And he was just like, you were the only one who wasn't reacting. He's just like, thank you so much for being a good sport. And I was just like, yo, give you another 5 minutes, it could have ended very differently. He's like, I could kind of tell it was going that way.
Oh, boy.
So it was definitely a night full of mind games.
Yeah.
And I realized what my threshold is. So that...
So head along the fringe and you two can...
Oh, my goodness.
It is interesting. You do, when you interface, because, folks, obviously we're on the radio here.
Yes.
And, you call up, we talk, it's great.
Yeah.
But the fact is, when you're in a live studio audience... at a fringe venue
where
the brakes aren't always on or applied, things get a bit loose. And I would encourage you all to just roll the dice and try it. And even if you end up in a situation like Sos here, you will at least have a story for the grandkids. So,
totally.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Head along to Adelaide Fringe if you dare, and you should.
Yes.
Thank you so much for chatting with us tonight, Sos.
Of course, anytime.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.